Welcome to the Relocate Global and Think Global People podcast series on emerging trends. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me today Dr. Susan Shortland, who's going to enlighten us on some of the approaches and solutions that are available to leaders and global mobility professionals in this sphere. I'm your host, Marianne Kerfey. I'm a writer for Relocate Global and Think Global People. I write about finance, technology, workplace culture, and diversity and inclusion. Sue is a senior lecturer in human resources management at the University of Westminster. Her career spans more than 40 years, during which time she's worked in both the private and the public sectors. She's a chartered fellow of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development and a senior fellow of the Higher Education Academy. Prior to working in higher education, Susan worked in a managerial role in international human resources management consultancy at accountancy firm KPMG. Prior to this, she managed the CBI's Employee Relocation Council. So lots of experience and very highly qualified. Welcome, Sue. Thank you for coming to the podcast today.
Yes. Hi, Marianne. It's good to be here.
So today we're going to address some of the leadership issues and challenges that leaders and managers face in creating a truly diverse workforce. So in the context of global mobility, this can be quite challenging, especially when organisations are trying to transfer Western concepts of inclusion, diversity and equality across to other geographies or other cultures. So our discussion today is around how these potentially thorny issues can be tackled, as well as how to build a truly diverse and inclusive working culture. And we're going to look at the business case for diversity alongside why it really matters from a human capital point of view, why it contributes and feeds into employee satisfaction, and why ultimately it also helps to retain talent and recruit new amazing talent. So we're going to talk first of all, I guess, about what diversity really means and why it matters. So Sue, can you define diversity? Because it's used in different concepts in different ways.
Oh, yes, it is indeed. But really what managing diversity is all about is about accepting that everybody is unique and that there are differences between everyone in the workforce. It goes beyond equalities legislation and it embraces personal characteristics as well. So it embraces all manner of things, including visible and non-visible differences, issues like sort of knowledge diversity, values diversity, and so on. So it's a very, very wide ranging concept, but its premise is that it celebrates difference.
Why does it matter in an organisation?
Well, because everybody has different views and different value sets and different areas of knowledge, and they bring these different perspectives to the workforce. So what that means is that we get new ideas, we get creativity from this. If everybody was the same and you have a non-diverse workforce, it's likely that you're going to end up with ideas and solutions that just reflect the status quo. You're not really bringing in new ideas and new differences. So also the idea behind diversity is that it should, your diversity of your workforce can reflect your diverse customer base, for example. So that means that the employees bring ideas into the workplace that actually reflect the customers that would be buying your products or your services. So that's clearly valuable.
That's really interesting. So it's kind of business proofing, future proofing for business there. So what, how does diversity, equality, inclusion go beyond the legislative requirements and law that organisations have to follow?
Well, the equality side of it sort of underpins everything. And that's, you see that in equalities legislation, so sort of like equal opportunities legislation. And that tends to address protected, what are called protected characteristics. So in the UK, we've got the Equality Act, for example, dating from 2010. And that basically provides protection against discrimination, really, based on protected characteristics, including, you know, gender, race, religion, sexual orientation, disability, age, and so on. So there's a range of characteristics under that act. And other countries likely to have employment legislation too that also covers equal opportunities or equality. It may be not quite as comprehensive as that in the UK, or indeed it may go further than that in the UK. But that's the underpinning principle. But what equalities legislation does is it provides equal chance. So it's the it means that individuals should not be discriminated against on the basis of whatever these protected characteristics are in law. But diversity goes further, because what it aims to do is it aims to widen out from equal chance to give equal access and equal share of opportunities within organisations based on a range of diverse characteristics that go beyond the protected characteristics in legislation.
So that's really exciting, and that's quite a kind of innovative development. So why do you think it's come to the fore now in global mobility? What kind of trends and trade winds have been moving employers and organisations to think about this in greater detail?
Well, diversity and looking for a diverse workforce has been around for many, many years in terms of just sort of domestic organisations, you know, what they do domestically. But I think it's come to the fore in global mobility, particularly since the pandemic. And that's because during the pandemic, individuals weren't able to relocate abroad, and international work had to be carried out remotely, typically from the home country or a third country, depending where individuals were based. And what that enabled was a much wider range of people, to take up these roles. So people who previously may not have felt that they could relocate to take up an assignment abroad. So that could be families with children or single parents or people with disabilities or depending on people's sexual orientation and so on. They may have felt that it wasn't really possible to relocate. Dual career couples as well, potentially. And so what happened was it widened out that talent pool for employers post-pandemic or during the pandemic and immediately sort of after it, getting used to a much wider range of individuals who were able to, willing to take up these international roles, provided they didn't have to move. But of course, what that means is employers have seen the benefit of getting this wider talent pool. But now they want to sort of reintroduce more mobility, get people back on the ground in the countries where they are operating. And that might now prove to be a limiting factor for those who find it more difficult to relocate. So the emphasis on diversity has grown as a result of that, I think.
That's really interesting, because I think from a business point of view, actually being able to bring in fresh ideas, new perspectives, as you say, reflecting the customer base and the stakeholders rather than just a small group of people in their own echo chamber is actually going to be really invigorating for a business. But what are the social arguments for diversifying a workforce, and what are the challenges involved in doing it?
Well, I mean, there's always a social justice argument, isn't there? You know, it's morally right that and ethically right that all individuals have an opportunity to pursue career opportunities. And if those involve international mobility or international experience, then everybody should be given an option to take part in that. I think, though, the sort of social side also, we have to recognise that conflict can arise from diversity. So it's not always, it doesn't always sound as rosy as you might think. There's lots of advantages, but it does. It's difficult. It's difficult to manage it. And that's because people do bring contrasting views, contrasting ideas, different value sets. But at the same time, if we're going to move out of that sort of echo chamber and apathy sort of area and into something that's dynamic and productive, that comes up with new ideas, we need to harness that conflict and harness it in a way that it's actually productive and not negative. And a healthy level of conflict is good for organizations.
No, it's interesting. That's also a challenge for leaders, isn't it? Managing conflict, helping to communicate to other employees why we need a diversity of thought, and ensuring that the organisation moves forward without conflict stopping it. So diversity can move it forward, but productive conflict can move it forward. But if it's just kind of stuck in some people wanting to change and others resisting it, then sometimes that can be a difficult situation to manage for leaders, can't it?
Well, it can, but I think, you know, that there needs to be an emphasis on creating a diverse culture and an inclusive culture. And that can often be supported through appropriate training for managers and leaders. So, and also it's about ensuring that everybody understands that the organization values diversity. And there's no point having diversity as a set of statistics. It's just sort of box ticking, number crunching exercise if you're not going to have an inclusive culture where you listen to people and respond to them. It doesn't necessarily mean that you take on every idea that comes forward, but it is about letting people put their ideas forward and hearing those and assessing what value they might have to the organization. So I think that inclusivity is the important point. Diversity can just be box ticking, and it shouldn't be. It's not really about what range of people you have and protected characteristics you can tick off on a list. It is about ensuring that all those people have an equal share of opportunity within the firm.
And actually, that's quite a courageous move to encourage employees with different voices to come forward and give their views, some of which might be quite uncomfortable or novel or different from the culture that the organisation has traditionally followed. So it does require some foresight and some bravery on the point of the managers as well, I imagine.
Yeah, it's creating a culture of psychological safety, isn't it? It's where everybody in a group feels able to speak, and that, you know, candor is safe. So whatever you say is going to be safe. And that's not really about sort of the same thing as trust. Trust is like on an individual basis between people and between employees and their managers. Psychological safety is like a group experience where people feel that they can actually, you know, criticize if they need to criticize or come up with new ideas.
Yes, great. That sounds really positive. So, what are the positive implications for human capital with a more diverse intake, and why is that an advantage for employers in today's times?
Well, human capital is about your human resource, and businesses can't operate unless they've actually got people. So there may be AI around the corner, but at the moment we definitely need people. So it's important really that people can bring a range of different skills, abilities, competencies, you know, knowledge, education. They can bring all these different things and just different viewpoints into the workplace. And that wider range of human capital is more likely to generate new ideas than just, you know, a narrow and traditional selection process whereby you just replicate the status quo.
There's also a strong business case argument for diversity. If employers needed a bit more of a nudge towards it, actually, there's the market competitiveness, isn't there, and the corporate reputation and branding. Can we dig a bit deeper and talk about why being diverse means actually you can be more successful and competitive as a business?
I think it enhances your brand image. So that's the first thing. So therefore, you're more likely to have, you know, stronger sort of talent wanting to work for you because your brand is a strong brand, because you're known as being socially and ethically just. So I think that's important.
And do you mean what you say as well? You're not just ticking boxes or greenwashing or pretending you have a diversity policy that's not disseminated through the whole organisation.
No, it's something that employees of any, you know, with any characteristics can buy into because everyone's an individual and they can bring their individual authentic selves into work. So that makes a difference not only to your brand image, but, you know, brand image, let's face it, makes a difference to your competitiveness as well, because, you know, if your brand is actually thought to be ethically correct, more customers are likely to go with you than they are with someone who gets bad press. So it does make a difference. But competitiveness comes from ideas, and different ideas that are being brought into the business obviously can make that business more successful.
And you mentioned talent as well. I mean, there's been a lot discussed and written about how Gen Z is interested in purpose and the kind of the reputation and the branding of the organizations that they work for. And that's just as important as salary or working conditions. And they want to feel that they work for an organization that is ethically and morally authentic. And I guess using diversity as a way of increasing appeal to that generation also means that you're able to recruit them better, rather than appearing as a kind of rather staid organization that's not moving forward, that doesn't encourage diversity, that doesn't encourage a variety of voices.
Yes, but I agree with that. I just think that, you know, you have to be a little careful of this business case argument, though, that you do use it in an ethical way, because obviously it's quite easy for employers to promote diversity when they feel that they are going to get a benefit from it, and they feel that, you know, maybe there is a shortage of talent in the market, and if they want to appeal to a wider base, the way they do it is to promote diversity. But then if you find that, you know, you've got a reverse situation, so in other words, there's lots of talent out there, what do you need to do to recruit it? Well, I suppose organisations could argue, well, you don't have to do quite so much, and the diversity mantra can just sort of drop away. We certainly saw this many, many years ago, actually, when there was a, I'm trying to think when it was now, it's probably in about the 80s, but, there was a shortage in the labour market, and employers spent a lot of time on trying to recruit women into the labour market through workplace nursery schemes and childcare vouchers and career break things and so on. And then what happened is the labour market turned around and there was more talent available out there. And all of a sudden, all those interventions just fell away. The workplace nurseries closed and so on. So, you know, that business case for diversity at that time was quite fickle. And I think if employers adopt that approach now, and, you know, one day they're all pro-diversity and the next day they take it away because they might not feel that, you know, they can get the talent without pursuing different objectives, then, you know, that actually doesn't do much for their brand image, does it? And individuals see through that very, very quickly. And it means that they are likely to, you know, lose their standing in terms of their sort of moral and ethical standing with potential employees, particularly the younger generation, I think, who are, have got quite high ideals. I'm not saying the older generation like me don't have high ideals, but they're definitely looking for, for their voices to be heard.
Yes. I was going to ask you about actually why diversity sometimes suffers when economic expediency declines. And you've kind of touched on that, but I wonder if there's something else going on.
Well, I think it depends on what you're spending on it, doesn't it? So if you are spending money and setting up workplace nurseries, my example there was serious money. And then if you don't need to attract people who need that benefit, you can see that that's something economically that you might have to drop. But I don't necessarily think that, you know, encouraging diversity is going to necessarily cost you huge amounts of money, really. It's about providing not only equality, it's about providing equity. So, and I don't think that necessarily has to be an expensive proposition.
That's interesting. Also, I'm wondering about the kind of different characteristics that are protected in the different genders and races that are perhaps involved in encouraging a greater range of people. But intersectionality comes into this too, doesn't it? Because not every woman has the same experience, not every person comes from the same social class. So it's not enough to say, right, well, we're going to recruit a greater number of women, or we're going to ensure that there's a greater representation of ethnic minorities. Actually, it's about looking in a lot more detail about how you spread out your workforce in terms of recruiting the right people from different backgrounds.
Yes, I mean, the thing is, the concept of intersectionality has been around for a long time, but that again is gaining prominence now. And what it's basically saying is that all of us bring our own individual characteristics to the workplace, and they can be a mix of protected characteristics, but also visible and non-visible differences. So the idea is everybody is different because everyone has multiple sort of interconnected different sort of characteristics. And the idea behind intersectionality is that these characteristics have a dimension of inequality or potentially lesser power, for example. So what the concept recognises is that, I guess what it's saying is, the whole is more than the sum of the parts. So, you know, if you're a woman, okay, you've got potentially gender discrimination. If you are a woman of colour, then you've potentially got double set of discrimination. If you're disabled or you're LGBT, then you've got additional areas of inequality and discrimination. But the idea behind intersectionality is you don't just add them all up and they create a total. I suppose it's like simple interest and compound interest, I guess, if we look at it financially. It's the sum is more than the individual components. So it means that the degree of inequality or lack of power that people suffer increases not directly proportional to the number of characteristics you're bringing into the workplace, but potentially more so. So in other words, it's more difficult, for example, for a gay woman of colour in the workplace than it is for, a woman without bringing additional characteristics in.
So that's something that employers need to really think about then when if they're looking at quotas, they need to look beyond the quotas, which comes back to your point about it shouldn't just be box ticking. It should be ensuring that leaders understand the whole process, that employees and stakeholders support it, and that you're very acutely aware of the value that your workforce can bring on an individual basis.
Yeah, I take issue with the word quota, actually, because I do feel that employers shouldn't be ticking boxes and ticking off, I've got this percentage and that percentage, you know. So quotas, I don't think are particularly helpful at all. But I do think that you can't design policies around, you know, multiple combinations of characteristics, and neither do I think you should be doing that. I mean, the idea is about recognizing people's individual contributions rather than trying to design a policy that is going to say, well, this is for this will encourage women, or this will encourage religious groups, or this will encourage disability. You know, it's about bringing it all together in a way that provides more flexibility to recognize everybody, so that people don't see themselves as being exceptions to a rule. They see themselves as just being part of a cohesive workforce.
Okay, great. That sounds really productive. So in terms of international mobility and diversity, there's an extra layer of challenge, but also opportunity there, isn't there? So we kind of understand how diversity might work in our sort of UK context, but then when you take that outside the UK, there are different challenges to organisations which are hoping to provide equal access and equal opportunities for all the workforce.
Yes, I mean, first of all, there might be different equalities legislation. So that's the first thing to think about. So certain protected characteristics that you might have at home, you may not be there abroad. And in fact, the legislation might actually preclude particular aspects. So that's something to think about. So that's the legislative side. But in terms of diversity, not all organisations internationally kind of recognise it in the same way as it's recognised in Western cultures. But if you are a Western headquartered firm and you are setting up in these locations, you know, newly emerging economies or developing countries abroad, it really is about trying to transfer your cultural values and explaining to the people who are in your local workforce why it is important, because that's your brand and it's a global brand that has to apply.
What about the issue of keeping employees safe while you're respecting their lifestyle choices? So I'm thinking about certain geographies or countries where it might be more dangerous to send certain types of employees. How can an employer ensure that they're providing the right duty of care while also providing equal access and opportunities for all of the workforce?
Well, I mean, obviously employers have a duty of care. They have to make sure that their employees and any family members accompanying them are safe. But there is an issue really about giving employees choice. So employees, you know, there could be that legislation, for example, prohibits homosexuality, and penalties could be as severe as the death sentence, for example, in some countries. So, yes, employers have a duty of care there. And clearly they don't want to be sending employees to a potential death sentence. But at the same time, employers, if they are going to ensure that they follow equalities legislation and promote diversity, they do need to give employees that choice, because, you know, that's the basic level of equality. But the way to do that is really to educate people such that anyone who might potentially be going abroad is given sufficient briefing, preparatory training, information, so that they can make a choice based on up-to-date and carefully selected information. So it doesn't mean that you just present that information to people who you think, you know, might have protected characteristics that are not going to be covered abroad. You present it to everybody such that all employees receive the same information, and then they're able to make an informed choice as to how they want to proceed, whether they want to undertake an assignment, whether they want to undertake it, but undertake it solo and leave their potentially same-sex partner at home, for example, but, you know, to give them the choice. But at the same time, remembering the duty of care that employers are bound by for their employees. So they do need to take some sort of risk assessments in some situations, of course.
That's really helpful. Thank you, Sue. And I think you said in one of the articles that you'd written that diversity management is not a one-off event, but actually a process of continuous improvement.
Yeah, I think the issue there really, it's about monitoring and evaluation, isn't it? I mean, you've got to see what's working and review your policies and practices as you go through. And you can do that. You can obviously monitor and see how your profile of international assignees is changing. You can review and evaluate issues that have worked well or issues that have not worked so well and so on. And therefore, the idea is you continuously move forward and improve rather than stay still. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. So in summary, diversity matters because not only does it provide equal opportunities and develop careers, and that there's also a business case for innovation and inclusion, but also it fuels creativity and growth and helps the people who work in an organization to feel valued and that they're achieving their potential and that their human capital is being used in a way that's sort of progressing their own career too. So Sue, thank you so much. Any final thoughts on how organizations can move forward with this?
I think the thing is don't be put off by it. It might sound a little daunting to be trying to accommodate all these different sort of views and perspectives, but the positive outcomes are going to be worth the effort. So I think my final thought is just it's a good thing to do, and it's very beneficial for employees and organisations. So keep trying.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. That's all from Sue and I today. But there is a series of podcasts on global mobility trends and international leadership. So do check them out.